So, Joe, Cindy's not going to be able to join us.
Okay.
Tom Imason is on the phone.
Okay.
Do we need, for the record, do we need to go through introductions?
Just a
quick roll call. All right. Joe Justice?
Here.
Tom Imason?
Here.
And Nils Christofferson, chairing the Board Subcommittee on Federal Forest. Do we need the rest of these guys to announce themselves?
Pete Doherty, State Forester.
Jeff Burns, Federal Initiatives Unit Manager.
Why don't you sit at the table?
Yeah, stay at the table.
Mainly ODF.
Chad Davis, ODF.
Hillary Lebo-Stewart, ODF.
Excellent. I don't have the agenda in front of me, so I'm going to steal yours. So we have minutes in the back of the board packet. Anybody have any corrections to the minutes?
I don't.
I reviewed them carefully, and they look good to me after.
Yep. Okay, good.
That would be great.
Yep.
So I have no good.
So I think, I mean, there's only two of us, so you want to make a motion to approve?
Yeah, I'll move to approve the minutes as presented.
And then I will have to second that, and then we have approved them.
All right.
Do you want to chime in? Any comment there, Tom, or not?
No, I don't even think I get a vote. I think I'm
disrespectful to
you. All right. So I read, look good to me. So.
Okay, thanks. Thank you for that. We want to get an update on the Wildfire Council report and recommendations and on activities under the Federal Forest Restoration Program / Good Neighbor Authority work. And then kind of after we've gotten that update, we will step back and think about the role and scope of this subcommittee. Chad and I talked in advance of this meeting, thinking essentially about two contingency plans. And one would be per some discussions we've heard with Jason Miner at the governor's office, a shared stewardship advisory committee is formed. And if it is given a mandate both to provide advice relative to the shared stewardship agreement between the state of Oregon and U.S. Department of Ag, as well as the Wildfire Council recommendations, then, you know, obviously in my opinion, we'd want to advocate for and assume we would get some position on that advisory committee. But that might change the scope of the subcommittee if that is working on those issues.
Can you talk a little bit about if there is such an advisory committee, where that sits?
I'll talk a little bit about the other states have done it, and they'll sit it in different places. I think it sits as a governor-convened committee to give it the kind of credibility it needs, because the shared stewardship agreement is a state agreement. It was implemented by ODF, but it's intended to be an all-agency agreement. You know, the next step is seeing which agencies want to start actively participating in it. And so, I think it...
So at least on paper, it's advisory to the governor, is what you're saying?
I think it would be advisory to the governor, unless... I have been talking to Glenn Casamassa about this, and he wants me to schedule a meeting between himself, myself, Jason Miner and Matt Donegan. I was going to add Nils in to talk about, you know, how would it best function Because if it's going to work to be a shared stewardship advisory committee, it should advise both the department or anybody involved in the shared stewardship, right, the state and the feds at the same time,
right,
at least under the concept of shared stewardship.
Right.
And so we haven't had that meeting. We're going to try to set it up pretty soon in January to get that going. But it's always hard to get a running start in January.
Yeah.
Particularly when you have a Board of Forestry meeting then.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think, again, I don't know.
I don't want to get too far into the plan A and plan B. I just wanted to lay out the outline for our agenda. But so that, after we kind of hear, I think, Chad, you're going to lead the reports on the various programs and everything. Mm-hmm. Then we'll talk a little bit about the role of the Federal Forest Subcommittee in 2020 moving forward with sort of two contingency or two plans. One, if that advisory committee is created, and that might narrow sort of the scope and purpose of the subcommittee, or if it's not. Okay? We'll get to that kind of to wrap this up. Does that sound right to everybody?
Yeah. And I don't know if the committee wants to weigh in on how it, because there's some concepts in the governor's bill right now for continuing the council. And, how do you want to, do you want to make a recommendation about having a shared stewardship committee and who it should be comprised of? And I think when we get to that point, I'd like to talk about the key things that I think that committee should be working on, and that may inform, kind of the level. Because the council, at least the way it was initiated and the people on it, I don't know if they're going to want to be in the details of some of the things right. that we need. So it may be it's a council and one subcommittee that forms together a shared stewardship advisory committee, or the shared stewardship advisory committee reports to the council with recommendations for feedback or something,
or vice versa, or
right, or some yeah.
And some I'd like to hear thoughts on that.
Okay.
And I think, and so after Chad kind of does the overview of where we're at, the recommendations of the council, I'll talk about at least some of the key things that were left undone by the council that we were hoping the council would do.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
All right.
So I'm gonna actually start with the crazy looking circles for just a second, and then jump straight
into
the.
Does Tom have this or not?
So Tom doesn't have this.
Can you email that?
And well, I can't sitting right here because I have my computer. Okay. I didn't send it to you.
We'll try to talk through this, Tom, and we'll get it to you eventually.
No,
okay.
It's not my email. I made it last night late.
Okay.
So, and the point of this, I think Tom can follow this without the visual, because the visual is not that exciting to be quite honest. So Tom is four circles and. There's one big circle on there, and that's the shared stewardship circle. So shared stewardship, frankly, can be a lot of what we want it to be, and there's a lot to be determined there. It can include recreation. It can include, clearly, fuels reduction, and that'll probably be the bulk of what we really use it for in the state of Oregon. It can include, in-stream, habitat, all kinds of things. So really that is a to-be-determined circle that's huge. Right, and what I wanted to do with this graphic is just to say, so the Federal Forest Restoration Program that we've had has had a slice of what shared stewardship could be, right? So shared stewardship is bigger than what we've done under FFR. And good neighbor authority is, oftentimes people kind of conflate good neighbor authority with the Federal Forest Restoration Program. But good neighbor authority is a component of our Federal Forest Restoration Program that we're doing here. But ODF&W is also doing good neighbor authority projects. And so that's why that circle kind of overlaps a little bit outside of the Federal Forest Restoration Program.
There's copy, too.
Yeah. And then the Wildfire Council report is another circle that kind of overlaps with all of that and fits within all shared stewardship, I believe. But it's, again, additional to what we've done under Federal Forest Restoration Program and or what we can use the Good Neighbor Authority for. So all the land use recommendations, for example, you know, all the talk about suppression and the role of unprotected lands and all of those aspects of the Wildfire Council's work are not things that we've ever talked about around this table, but is, I think, in the context of what shared stewardship could be, it encompasses all of what the Wildfire
Council. I think that is pretty easy to follow, Tom. I mean, it's a large circle with three inset circles that are overlapping. And the only thing I would say is, you know, the visual presents that shared stewardship encompasses all of this, that there's overlap between Federal Forest Restoration Program, Good Neighbor Authority, and Wildfire Council report, but there's also elements of each of those three subsets that are distinct from the other three. And the only thing I would say when I look at that is that, to me, some of the Wildfire Council report spills outside a shared stewardship agreement.
That's what I would have said
And let's talk about that. So okay. In what way... Because, again, shared stewardship is really broad, and it can be defined under what we want. So I'm interested in what aspects of that you see.
So, immediately it comes to me the things around WUI land use planning and building codes, for example. That's not about USDA shared stewardship. I realize it's related to the cohesive wildfire strategy, so you could argue that. But it strikes me that it's different.
To kind of engage you in that.
Yeah, sure.
Push back on your chair.
Yeah.
So when I've read the shared stewardship documents, there is this concept of shared risk in there that we don't talk about, we haven't talked about. So yes, shared stewardship has been generally talked about around the fuels management side of the equation as it relates to wildfire. Agreed. But what the state of Oregon is doing, I would say through what the Governor's Council and what Matt has initiated, is to say, you know what, some of responsibility of reducing wildfire risk is on us. And we can do that through our zoning and through our land use pieces. And so in terms of shared stewarding a resource to protect it from and make it more fire resilient, et cetera, there are things that are wholly within the state's purview that help address the overall issue and the overall problem that aren't necessarily about treating landscapes, whether they're public lands or private lands. That's the pushback I would give. And I think that... That's, again, I continue to ask this question of our Forest Service partners at different forums, including the one that we read in Montana, to say, are we going to talk about the shared risk component? Because we've got to share that risk as a state and federal piece. And some of that is, now in Oregon, we're in a pretty good position because we don't have urban sprawl in the way that Jeff's former home state of Colorado has it, for example. So, but there's things, if you think about it from the state of another state that doesn't have a land use policy like us, I would argue, that could make some impact on the rate of spread and the impacts of wildfire to the state and to its citizens by thinking about development and zoning and firewise programs and all those other things as well. So that's the only pushback. But I think in the state of Oregon, what we need to decide upon is what is in our shared stewardship circle. And maybe, Nils, what you're suggesting and what we eventually do is that's not in ours. But again,
that's a fair response. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other part I didn't see necessarily is really being super tied to shared stewardship, but if you make anything that's with a cohesive wildfire strategy tied, then I lose the argument. But there's flooding suppression capacity is simply in a sense is a state response issue, and so whether it's in or out, I would characterize it, there are some things that we probably won't spend a lot of time, we'll keep the Forest Service informed, but we won't be sharing decision space, maybe as it goes along suppression becomes more integrated and it is differentially integrated depending where we are in the state, so much more so on the east side. So again, I think it's a good, obviously it's a good graphic to get us discussing about the overlap and whether things are in and out.
Well, I'll yield the floor. I think that relative to the question that Nils teed up initially about if there is a continuance of the Wildfire Council or there's a shared stewardship advisory, understanding where the scope of those things overlap and where they don't is important.
Yeah.
So the graph can be right or wrong, but in the end, once we have multiple layers around this governance piece, we'll need to clearly be able to articulate and define what is this committee's purview, subcommittee's purview, what's the board's purview, and if there is a governor's council, what does it do? And if there are areas of overlap and one fits within the other, fine. If there are clear areas that this is outside of this scope, then okay, let's just know that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah. I also appreciate too that the governor. Now, you signed the shared stewardship agreement on behalf of the governor.
No, the governor signed it.
The governor, right. I was
the Secretary of Agriculture.
Right, you drafted it. That's right.
Yeah.
Right. So the governor signed it on behalf of the entire state.
Right.
Yeah.
And, and then Jim signed it on behalf of the Secretary of Agriculture.
Right.
But the name on the document is the Secretary. So it's at the highest level in terms of the state. The Department of Agriculture.
I didn't figure that would be as exciting as the conversation.
But, I mean, getting to where you and I talked about, it's important, you just said, right? I mean, one way or the other, we got to, decide where we want to focus our attention and sort of what's going to be handled by which groups.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And what our niche and value is.
Exactly.
Okay.
So,
all right, that was
setting
that
aside. I tried to. I got something in front of me that's a work in progress. But so we have the Wildfire Council executive summary, which we provided, and what I don't think we provided is the. So that was published in November of 2019, and I have the executive summary sitting in front of me. Wildfire Council recommendation report, Tom, is what I'm referring to. It has 37 different recommendations in it. Matt's come before the board and talked about that at a pretty good length and pretty good detail. What has subsequently occurred, and I was staff for this committee, Mills was on the committee, is the mitigation committee has developed its final report, so the mitigation committee of the Wildfire Council. And that report I do need to make sure I share around as well. That report was subsequently published in December. December 11th is the date on the document, after the Wildfire Council's report. But it does continue the work of the committee's work. This is an interesting little thing.
Is it different?
It has different recommendations, but it adds depth, and clarity and detail.
Okay.
It's organized differently, so you kind of need a crosswalk.
Okay.
So that's what I was trying to do. So there's in the mitigation recommendation final report, there are 7 recommendation areas that really unpack into 39 different recommendations. So, I've tried to take my stab at describing what I think are big catch-alls that you could crosswalk these things to, and I'm going to walk through those. And there are 5 of them that jumped out to me as I was reading this, but realize this is Chad's editorialization. You won't find that in the summary of the Wildfire Council reports or other mitigation reports.
Can you get that into shape to just kind of send out? Or?
I should be able to do that. I know Hillary's going to want me to do that.
So these goal twos are really the mitigation.
Goal twos. What page are you on, Joe?
Page 7.
Page 7.
Goal two.
Yeah.
Page 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Start there. Right. That's really mitigation. Mm-hmm. Correct. But I'm going to try to. That's really what I'm trying to focus on. Here is the mitigation side and crosswalk the Wildfire Committee recommendations with the mitigation subcommittee's recommendations. So the 5 areas, and I'll just walk through these one by one. The first one is to use the quantified risk assessment as the base for prioritizing fuel treatments. Those are my words. We can talk about what the quantified risk assessment is. It's an interagency kind of mapping prioritization process around wildfire risk, and wildfire risk in particular to communities and to assets of value. So if you're looking at that, Wildfire Council recommendations 15 and 16 kind of talk to that, and then mitigation area risk area number 1 talks to that. So I can do that for each of these if you're interested, but I'm not going to do it to that level of detail. The second piece of it is a significant program expansion to reduce fuel loads on all forest lands. So it's definitely a call for an all lands approach. So it's but a significant program expansion, and that's a, it kind of speaks to ODF's program or the state's program. It doesn't speak specifically to the Federal Forest Restoration Program, but it kind of is pointing in that direction. So a significant expansion. The recommendations there talk about a long-term funding model to build partnerships, to do environmental analysis on federal lands, and to monetize timber as an asset to pay for some of this work, and to make a significant state investment, if you kind of lumped up some of the recommendations there. The third big category is to increase fire and smoke tolerance. And the reports talk about them in very different ways. The Wildfire Council report talks a little bit more around the use of prescribed fire and kind of opens up the door around what some people are calling unplanned ignitions, I guess is the right term. Where I think the mitigation report goes into a little bit more intentional use of unplanned ignitions and as a mitigation strategy or as a fuels reduction strategy, in addition to kind of the non-fire, I guess you would say, or the pre-management side of the equation. So that's the third big category. The fourth one is to identify and resolve long-term barriers. These really are about federal policy and or administrative, like either legislative policy fixes or administrative policy fixes. This is like how we get work done faster, smarter, through a different process. Both reports kind of, or both products speak to the need to do that, but they don't identify a lot of what those things are, right? And then the last one is to develop governance structure around implementation of all the recommendations, which Neil's kind of referred to initially. And those may not completely have unpacked perfectly for you all. But again, use the QRA as the base for prioritizing where to do work, which is enough, was we did call for a, in the shared stewardship agreement, a way to like, where do we start, basically. Significant program expansion to do it, including significant state investment into that program. And we can talk about that. Increase fire and smoke tolerance, both on the, you know, use prescribed fire, but also figure out a way to do this. What does it make sense on the unplanned ignitions? Identify and resolve long-term barriers, which is more of a policy play, which we talked about previously in the subcommittee, but we've probably never put pen to paper on particular recommendations. And then develop a long-term governance structure. And the reason I tee that up is I think that, and Nils, you were there, a lot of the conversation in the mitigation committee was not, I mean, did assume more fire on the landscape, whether it was with a drip torch or whether you're harnessing, you know, weather to do some of the work for us. But that is an issue that I don't think we've ever talked about necessarily in the context of this subcommittee, because historically, the subcommittee was born out of a need to do something around federal forest management, right? Active management ahead of the fire. Then we had the Federal Forest Restoration Program come into existence, and we needed some guidance and some, you know, how to stand that thing up, and we've done that. And I think now we're seeing an evolution of how we get ahead of the problem work coming through this wildfire committee's work. As to what degree does fire play a role in helping us achieve those, you know, those kind of conditions that we want to see on the landscape. If we go there, if the scope of this committee wants to go and take on what I would say is the full breadth of what's in the mitigation committee's report, I think we need our partners from the protection division here, since a lot of that stuff, right, really lives and is operationalized in their division. Where the pre-management or the pre-fire management side of it has clearly always been more, you know, in the purview of, at least on federal lands in the Federal Forest Restoration Program. But as it relates to state lands, state forests, as it relates to private lands, also happen both through our protection division and through our private forest divisions.
And I think that, you know, that's kind of the key is as we get more into shared stewardship, our federal forest restoration utilizes our state forest program, and if it expands significantly, there are going to be some, you know, operational decisions down the road about where that program lives. And you know, I think there's still a lot of policy work to be done before we get there, but I think that's going to be all of a sudden this committee's who they want to engage with on a particular topic, and it won't be Chad, you'll be saying, okay, this time we'd like to talk about prescribed fire, or we would like to talk about use of unplanned ignitions, and we would want to get the right people from protection in here to work with the committee and set the schedule. So what we choose to focus on in this subcommittee will, if, I think no matter if we're going to continue, it's going to broaden who we'll be engaging with. So a little bit different kind of support. And
yep. Let me ask you a question. So you weren't trying to be comprehensive about the Wildfire Council report. You were trying to pick out things that seemed to be obviously fitting with the committee today.
A little bit about. I was trying. No, definitely not trying to be encompassing the whole report.
Right, because you. I mean, obviously, as you said at the end, the protection suppression side and all the land use stuff.
What I tried to do here was overlap the mitigation work coming out of the council report with kind of history of what this committee has talked about. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But my point there is that the suppression committee in this group primarily talked about features of state response on state lands, right? Yeah. So that our normal protection business. And you were with it in most of these conversations. There was a lot of talk about using prescribed fire more, in the mitigation committee. And then nobody said, I think people were meaning the use of unplanned ignitions on public for federal land. I think some people wanted to go there, but nobody was so brave enough to really say it. But I think that's largely what
I actually drew. I drew a diagram for Matt that I tried to sum up what I thought I was hearing in the mitigation committee. Now, this is what my perception, and it wasn't part of the formal report that was signed off on everybody, but we did talk about sort of this understanding that there's sort of three categories of land that we're talking about. We're talking about the WUI, and then the actively managed lands and the unmanaged lands or protected lands, whatever you want to call them. We were also calling them backcountry, but that got kiboshed. But that within those categories, within the WUI area, essentially all handwork, mechanical work. There's no fire really there, right? Yep. As soon as you go into the actively managed grounds, you start using prescribed fire. You may, but on a very limited basis, see some management of unplanned ignitions or natural ignitions or whatever the right word is. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you move into those protected categories, so that middle category is a lot of mechanical, more prescribed fire. And that last category is particularly if it's protected, almost zero mechanical unless they send in hand crews in specific inventory roadless areas, etc. And it's managed ignitions or prescribed fire or suppression.
And so they do actually send equipment in for suppression in those areas, which is. They don't allow mechanical, you're right.
Yeah.
And I think that in some of our areas, particularly around, say, Bend, they're wanting increased use of prescribed fire in the interface, which is creating the challenge.
And in Ashland, too, right?
Yeah, around, and it's creating it created that issue around the smart
management program. Well, I don't know how you define urban interface.
But they're burning, they are certainly burning.
But in both enterprise, so Wallowa County, but focused around enterprise, and Baker County, probably focused around Baker, are going to try to put in for this
LSR, landscape scale restoration.
No,
special.
Oh. The smoke management.
Oh,
no,
it's
Baker West.
So Matt Howard is convening a group tomorrow for Wallowa County and enterprise to try to put together a proposal.
And it's not like the board hasn't dealt with that, right?
Yeah.
We just haven't dealt with it. So the smoke management policy you guys did on the board, I think it might have been before Joe's time. But the board's changed that policy and moving forward. The mitigation report calls for some different things as it relates to prescribed fire. And so if you're going to take that on in this subcommittee or whether that comes, that's part of the longer-term question. I think this committee will continue to be engaged through the Federal Forest Restoration work
one,
we're doing.
No, I'm with you. I mean, the one part, and you know, hopefully I didn't go too off script for the Department of the Board, but when I was asked to testify, and you heard it, we talked about it afterwards, and I think it was Greg Barreto that asked me, what do you mean by treatment? And I said, we're talking about commercial and non-commercial logging, we're talking about prescribed fire, and in some cases we're talking about acres having a reduced fuel load because of a wildfire. And but that's not obviously the emphasis of this report. The emphasis of this report is to invest in things we can actively do.
Well,
but I would also say, like, when I talked to Paul Hesburgh, you know, because he came to the final day of our event, the November Wildfire Council meeting.
Okay. Yeah.
He came to that. And then he and I went out and had a beer afterward. He said, you know, most of their scientists are saying, if you really want to reduce risk and keep risk managed, you've got to be treating 5% of the landscape a year. So that's 1.5 million acres. And, you know, and we're not calling for that. And so he's saying you really should count the wildfire acres, right? Because that's going to be key to hitting this more significant target to reduce risk.
And you know, I reading his work, he would like to do that in a lot broader area, including in the actively managed areas, but not until
the fuel loads are reduced.
They'll and you get some control points. Yeah. So, and the other thing that I think, so I don't think he went beyond the department. We focus so much in our discussion around the legislature about what our responsibility for fire protection is, which is put it out. And so we know we need to get better, and Doug will start doing this. And I think the fire was at that they just did the video on?
The Granite Gulch.
Granite Gulch fire. We were tied into that and fully supportive of using that, because it was not only in the right location and fairly protected, it was there were plenty of resources around, so you could have a helicopter there, you know, managing that unplanned ignition by putting water on it whenever it started burning too hot.
Right.
And they, you know, Joe Hessel's on that video.
It's a good video.
And the other thing that, you know, so the Forest Service was really pleased with that. I think that our response, and I think we're much more comfortable in Eastern Oregon where we have a lot more experience, and there are more of those places where risk to urban areas, you know, you get really uncomfortable around Medford and some of those areas.
That video, I can tell you, that video, it was interesting because, you know, there's a lot of environmental groups that were excited to see that type of strategy being deployed and then celebrated in such a public way, which wasn't surprising to me. But what was surprising to me, and I think I mentioned it to at least some of us before, is that the county commissioners in Union County and Wallowa County were also praising this. Not initially, like initially in Union County when they first saw the plumes, they were like, what is going on?
But it's much of them getting educated.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I think shared stewardship and our role, you know, they, we're differentially trusted because of our aggressive nature in putting them out. And us weighing in and saying, this is a great situation, we fully support it, I think helps a lot in terms of perhaps that local support. It'll be interesting to see, can we make that same kind of progress in Southern Oregon?
Right. Okay, but for the purpose of today, I mean, I think your summary of kind of the key things that have that sort of fit naturally within what our focus and scope has been makes sense to me. It's important, I think, that we all understand that the report is broader than that, so you've left some things out, particularly as we try to circle back to what the future will be.
Well, and so just to cover that, Chad and I talked about this, you know, from the suppression side in the committee recommendations, these are recommendations that are tiered differently, but they're not incongruous with the board-approved policy action package.
Right.
And it takes all So if all the recommendations would implement, it would be broader than what we put in our policy option package. It would have more GNA state forest positions.
Right.
It'd have about the same amount of interface foresters, but it would also add capacity for underprotected lands and unprotected to range land, which we didn't try to include. And then I think the other areas is land use, and the key thing is the view of bringing in state fire marshals and adding capacity there. So I think with from the suppression side, the board will have an opportunity to respond to what happens in the short session and then shape...
When you say suppression, that's is that the same as protection, or is it...
Yeah, protection from fire.
Because yeah. Some of those positions to me weren't all suppression positions that you just listed, right?
They were
more protection, right? Thinking about defensible space and, yeah.
Right, but the focus on suppression was primarily around capacity and modernization.
Yeah. Yes, correct.
So I think the board's already weighed in on that, and we'll have another chance.
I mean, that goes all the way back to the Large Fire Committee report.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
The Large Fire Committee, the Secretary of State audit. So I think that, you know, I think the area that we haven't talked about is what role this group may or may not want to play in the land use stuff.
Right.
But I think for the... I think a lot of that stuff, say building codes or utilities, you probably don't need to weigh in. It depends on, you know, how much prevention they want to do around utility lines. You might say, well, that's getting a little bit big. But and already the board has a policy around strong land use laws that is consistent with what the recommendations are. So I think, you know, I just want to be clear, Chad and I discussed the full set of recommendations and, you know, kind of focused in on where there's still a lot of policy work to do, particularly nexus with the board is around the mitigation part of the recommendations. Is that fair?
No, it is. It is. And I mean, and again, Nils heard it. I think that there, and what I experienced in the mitigation committee is, particularly from our conservation friends, environmental partners, is the willingness, the interest in doing fuels reduction work, including commercial logging parts, to the degree that they're also available to use fire, both prescribed and unplanned ignitions down the road. I think there's some concern and nervousness to whether this department is willing to go there, but you and I have talked about this through Blue in the Face. I've talked with Peter and talked with Doug. I think the department is interested in doing it in the right time and place, right? Supporting partners doing that, not on state protected lands, because I think we would then be in violation of statute.
Right.
But as it relates to federal lands, I think right time and place is something to figure out. I don't know that needs a policy statement or something. No. Maybe it does. I think there is this disconnect or this distrust that the department is willing to consider that. And I don't know how we help get over that, because I don't think that we necessarily are, because I think we're actually doing it in places. You give some good examples. So how do we help bridge that awareness gap or that understanding gap of where we are vis-a-vis our explicit direction under, you know, ORS 477 and what that might mean on a different landscape in particular locations where the landscape is not as checkerboarded or blocked up or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And so everybody talks about our mission is being put out fires, is to put out unmanaged fires.
Right.
And it's very clear that the decision is predicated on the fact we don't think that the landowner has provided adequate resources to manage the fire. And so if a landowner is adequately managing the fire and has resources, we would not feel it's not a nuisance. And so, I mean, it's how we've I think a lot of it's been the language we focused on
it's
a false dichotomy between,
So because obviously a lot of people have spun this report in different ways, and the environmental community has particularly just said, this is more of the same. It is more suppression and commercial logging,
right?
And I was called by a whole bunch of people to give my impression. I said, that's just wrong.
Thank you.
But I explained to them why it was wrong on the mitigation side. And then I was a little more cautious on the suppression side, right? I said, we had a lot of discussion about the importance, the role that wildfire is going to play in helping us achieve more resilient landscapes, but also the tremendous risk associated with letting fires burn, and the need to have control points, set things up, right, and be in the right place in the right time. And it's a difficult decision for the individual, incident commander to make. But I do think we got to figure out the language around that. So people, in building off that Granite Gulch fire and that communication, that look, we're not going to put out all fires. We understand that there's a time and a place to do this.
Yeah. And the we there, I think, is important. And maybe this is the language piece. The we is, again, under the concept of shared stewardship, we supporting, partnering with the Forest Service to manage a fire differently than what we're going to do with a state protected.
Correct.
And so when it's...
In almost all cases, like unless there's a rare case.
Right. There's some cases where we shouldn't do that. And I'm not the one to make the judgment on that.
Yeah.
But like Peter said, our mission is to put it out. I think when people hear us say that, they think then we're going to go tell the Forest Service.
That their mission is...
It's our mission to put it out on state-protected land where landowners pay us to do that. So I think there's ways that we don't have to, like... I wonder whether there's language that we can start sharpening a little bit to where we're clear about what we're trying to do, what our mission, our statements are. And that leave open opportunities, but don't necessarily, poke the beast, because some people would actually have a problem with us saying we're going to be okay with some unfinished fire.
Well, I also think
we're not always going to be that way.
No, I think the key words you've said it is right place, right time, right place.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the other thing, though, that will raise an issue, and this would require a kind of policy around prescribed fire, is the liability issue and the risk I'm willing to take with the department. The two states that had been active in it are no longer at, well, I guess Nevada is still trying, but Colorado lost their ability in their state. No, the reality of it is, what everybody's talking about is moving from negligence to gross negligence,
right.
And in the case, there are two cases with the other state agencies. Nevada was convicted of gross negligence.
Right. Oh, really?
Well, they went to a court, they went to a jury trial. Mm. You get good attorneys, you don't follow your burn plan to a T,
right.
And then you characterize that as gross negligence. They're willing to talk about everything that went wrong, and maybe you could. We could bulletproof it, but there were things like the burn plan said there'd be a burn boss on site. Well, there wasn't a burn boss on site 24/7 for the length of time, so either you have to be perfect in your burn plan about when you're going to be there and what conditions allow you to go away.
Right.
And it's not a guarantee, and so I think there's got to be a really thoughtful policy discussion about the risk to a state agency to get sued and end up. And again, this was one of the classic things. They were doing a prescribed burn around homes, and everybody was on board until an unexpected wind gust, a big one, took it. and burned up a bunch of very expensive homes.
So we need to keep moving. But the one thing I would say that I think is helpful in this conversation is Dana's graph. And the only thing I would say to add to it, so Dana's got that graph of footprint acres, right?
Yeah.
Of mechanical treatment, prescribed fire, and managed unplanned.
Whatever the hell we call it.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Managed ignition.
That was all
right. Other.
Other fire.
And, you know, I use that over and over again because it calls out that we're counting that as part of our footprint, part of reducing risk. But it would be really, I think from a learning perspective, it would be interesting to track, you know, with the growth of that, is there a corresponding growth or not? Or are there, like, when are there incidents where those wildfires have burned houses down or caused value, you know, lost values?
Oh, interesting.
Right? Yeah. So, because my guess, my sense is, like with the Granite Gulch fire, right, we're going to be able to report a lot of acres that did nothing wrong. And the more we can sort of get that in people's minds that the, a growth of this does not just mean, you know, more blackouts and burned down homes and et cetera, the better for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And then be honest where it is, right? So we're gauging that risk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's hit. Why don't you give us a summary of where we are on FFR and GNA?
I won't go through this in detail, perhaps. So, all right, so I'm going to go to the first. So, first of all, there's been, as we all know, some questions about transparency in the department and where we're giving grants and where we're not giving grants. So, I wanted to provide this subcommittee as my main governance structure an update on that and provide you with the printout. So, there's the staple piece, and then there's this federal forest restoration two-pager, and then there's a bunch of boring-looking charts with numbers and project descriptions and all of that, and Joe looks like he doesn't have it, so he's about to get it right now. So I'm not going to go through all those, I promise. Those are the details to what's on this slide number two right under the graph that
and
I just gave.
And the transparency and questions have mostly been about grants back to Sustainable Northwest?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Over time there's been others beside the good senator from Medford asking questions. But there have been questions from other people about how do you do particularly the technical assistance stuff?
Yeah.
How do you decide on that?
Yeah.
Who got the money? Blah, 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 blah.
You know, you have outside people serving
on that.
We do.
And we've got to improve that stuff internally. So my intention is to get that stuff up on our website so that it's at least there and findable and searchable. And the process that we use, describe the process that we use. But yes, this biennium, what we did was included external participants in the review process, both for the collaborative grants, but also the technical.
I think that's just good practice. We do that all the time because our community is so small that
you're just open to criticism.
Yeah.
Otherwise. So there's the details. So we awarded 11 grants, which funded about 69% of what we got submitted to the collaborative groups on the technical assistance and science support. That funding 8 projects, which was 63% of what got submitted. Again, we can go into the details if you're interested. And then we put almost $600,000, a little bit over that, to project planning support. The data collection projects we've been doing since inception, since 2013, those kinds of things. So paying for surveys of particular resources and really investing a lot in using LIDAR to get ahead of particular kind of historical, you know, boots on the ground, got to go out and look at every acre kind of thing. And we're starting to see a lot more of that. And then,
so are all these PACE things funded?
No.
Oh.
Most of them were, though. The only two on the back were not funded.
Okay, gotcha.
And then actually using state funds, as we did in the previous biennium, to do some categorical exclusions. I think there's 3 projects this biennium that we're using state funds for, and we're going to do more of that kind of work with GNA program revenue, which I'll talk about in just a second. But that's state dollars. This is general fund dollars of the, you know, the $3 million program that the state has. in terms of the money that's going out the door that's not supporting program staff, et cetera. This is the funding allocations for that, and then there's all the details. So somebody says we're funding one particular entity too much. There's the details to what we're doing. Then on the back of this, a quick G&A recap, moving on to kind of the PowerPoint slides. I think we all know what G&A is, what it does. So I'll skip the top slide. The second slide is just a point to remind us that there's two types of Good Neighbor Authority Agreements. Everybody gets really focused on the timber sale pieces, which we call program revenue SPAs, which we know why, because there's an opportunity to use funding from the asset, timber sale, to do the work and to pay for the work. So we understand that. But the Forest Service also pays us to do certain services. And I just listed a few examples there. So they paid us to do a lot of non-commercial thinning. They paid us to do stand exams for sales that they'll get out the door. GPS units, you know, just in these needs are really, really flexible. Not flexible, they're really variable from what forest needs what. Like certain forests have a ton of layout people, but they have no specialists. Some forests have all specialists and they have no layout people. The distribution of skills and is fascinating when you start to try to look at it across the state. There's no rhyme or reason at times. It's just whatever.
Where people end up. And,
yep.
And I mean, in some states, they've actually put teams together to travel around.
Yeah, enterprise teams.
Yep. So, again, moving on to the next, kind of really quickly, I put some accomplishments there. We're a little bit behind on the acres treated. Those numbers come from the Ecosystem Workforce Program's monitoring of our work. We'll get those updated with additional monitoring of those. The numbers are modest at best, I would say, right now. There seems to be this big focus again on timber sales. So to date, we've sold 8 projects totaling 14 million board feet.
How many have been harvested?
And we're starting, so 3 of those are active. So 3 of the 8 have been acted on. 2 of those were deck sales. So whatever.
Makes it easy.
But the money comes in the door. The money comes in the door fast. And so that's why we've got about $900,000 of program revenue in the quote unquote bank because of that. And then on the next slide down, what we're doing with that money, because that always comes up. We are able to recover our cost to prep and administer those sales. And then the next priority is implement fuels reduction treatment. So basically those activity fuels that are generated during harvest, and or do other acres that are prescribed for treatment that don't have commercial value because the timber's already been harvested or because, you know, it's a black bark pine stand and there's not a whole lot of value there currently. We've done invasive weed treatments on some work, and then we're starting to use the money more around data collection and drafting of environmental analysis documents for subsequent future projects. What we plan to do with some of this is really to, I mentioned earlier that ODF&W is also doing Good Neighbor Authority, is really think about in particular places, and this will probably happen more on the west side than the east side where timber values and volumes allow for there to be leftover funds, is to move some of that money over to do particular habitat projects that are of value to collaborative partners and or other partners that ODF&W is probably better suited either to contract or do themselves than ODF.
And the other thing you could do, I think, on the west side more so is recreational improvements.
Recreation. We're pretty limited to be able to use G&A for recreation. The authorizing stat, yeah, it's pretty much a red face test right now with recreation. And, a lot of states want to do it because a lot of partners want to do it and states see the value in it. We need to be careful not to lose the authority. And we've talked about that with my colleagues at Idaho and Montana about everybody wants to do trail work. Everybody wants to do the pave roads up to trail signs. And
well,
like,
so there you go. Identify one of the policy barriers for being successful in getting buy-in.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it's in the shared stewardship agreement.
I agree.
And so there's an area, you know, you're talking about the report hasn't identified barriers, I think.
I mean, there's certainly, there's no question that there's a lot of need on the recreation side. I personally would still encourage us to complete treatments, to complete all the
without
service
work. Yeah, without a doubt. And so I think other thing to think about on the east side, and we haven't, I think this is hard to pass a red face test, is moving west side revenue to east side projects.
Brilliant idea.
Yes.
It's a brilliant idea. It's not a red face test to be tossed by a county commissioner.
Well, there's two red face tests. We could define the spa to run east-west if we wanted to, and then we're within the operating agreement area. It's more of local resistance.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
But, again, talking about barriers.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing about that is trying to map out, like, you know, the whole equity issue here, like, which forests and which areas are tapping into other funding, like the CFLRP right now, right? And how do we try to ensure that we're filling some holes that don't have that?
And what I think the program is evolving towards is, so the reason that we're spending state money on categorical exclusions, to be honest, is, or NEPA analysis, whatever you want to call them, we are doing CEs for them exclusively right now. I'm not opposed to doing an EA, it's just they're much more timely and costly. I believe that we'll need to continue to make state investments in that on the east side. I think west side, once we get rolling and there's enough timber value, those will pay for plenty of additional analysis projects. Where we're going to struggle with that is in this place, it's crazy, I love it to death, a place called Northeast Oregon, and on the Fremont Wainema in particular, right, where the value per acre is not quite there. You have value per acre in the Northeast. I think it's about, what are we harvesting up there? I keep struggling with that. But
the prescriptions are getting better. I mean, the prescriptions are getting better and generating more value, but there's still problems, obviously.
Because you're right.
I know a lot of women in the Umatilla, there's something like 80,000 acres of NEPA-ready ground to treat.
Including both commercial and non-commercial?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're going after the CFLR?
Yeah, correct.
And we could talk more about that. I talked to Mike this morning about, you know, different forests are really wanting to do GNA differently. And I don't mean like do it. Yes, differently is a good thing because we learn things every time we do it. I mean in terms of what they're interested and willing to even consider. And I'll just, without being too bad, I think in Northeast Oregon we're still trying to like make that connection, particularly on the Willow Whitman.
Yeah, kind of surprising.
The last thing I wanted to do on the back of this was it's always helpful to sit down with colleagues that are doing the same work as you, compare notes, et cetera. And so for the last couple of years, we've been sitting down with leads in Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, all four states here, kind of the Intermountain West, and comparing where we are or what we're trying to do. And we're all going about a different, they have all different socio-political conditions. But John Songster, in particular, the Idaho lead, wanted to talk about, he wanted to put this on the wall and compare it, and they kind of keep coming back to it. And it's interesting to me, you know, again, state policy is different everywhere. Idaho doesn't need to ask the legislature for position capacity. They can just, like the Forest Service, if they have the money, they can hire who they need to get the job done. We don't have that. And so Idaho has actually got 12 employees for relatively small state investment because they don't need to ask the legislature for that capacity. Same thing in Washington. So when you look at so the FTE that, numbers, so it's
not,
much bigger.
So it's not an apples to apples then?
Well, it's not apples to apples.
Because those 12 people are not being paid by that $500,000.
Those 12 people are, right. Those 12, right. No, gosh.
And on the other columns are the 6 and 8 people being paid by the investment? Or not?
No, I think it's...
Yes, 6 and 8 are largely being paid by that state investment,
so it's not
in Montana and Idaho. Yeah. And Washington's about half and half, and Idaho it's not. So no, it's not, it is not. I have a lot more columns to this table, I just didn't put them on here, to look at, because what you need to look at is dollars into the program, no matter where they're coming from, right, so bottom line dollars, and I don't have that line on here.
But I just think the reason I was asking that, right, is that... you know, there's always concern if money is coming to a state agency that it is just taking care of itself and staffing itself and not putting money on the ground.
Right.
Well, and I'm trying to think, like, how does this picture actually look in that regard? And, you know, the reality is that the Idaho has a different source of funding to cover those 12 positions.
They are
from a much smaller investment. A, they've leveraged more private investment. They've been able to get, you know, in theory, based on what this says, more sales done and more volume. Right, and more program revenue, and we just need to make sure that that's not like misinterpreted and spun the wrong way.
Well, and
different prescriptions, a different
different forest,
And those FTE, are they're not eight people? They're parts. Does that include when we're paying our contract crews?
No, this is basically program FTE. So that's the four coordinators, the two GNA foresters.
The four
sales position.
Two GNA, the four coordinators, regional coordinators.
Two GNA foresters, Phil's old position, and I'm trying to think of the other one. It's probably a combination of Pelissier's time, and I think I made them whole numbers instead of, you know, partial. Yeah. So it's probably like 7.5, to be honest.
Yeah, well, and so the question going back to the original report on service work, you know, we've brought in a total of $8.9 million.
Right, which is not here.
Right, and so the money that you're using, you're comparing to, are only revenue brought in from GNA?
That says said GNA dollars since 2006, no PR?
Right.
Code means no, that's GNA, no timber sales. So Idaho has had a lot of money that the Forest Service has pumped into GNA, and that's actually been to do contract NEPA, interestingly enough. It's not that they haven't done contract NEPA, but they've done it to, like, hire a specialist. So, like, they've hired a hydrologist. So one of those 12 people is a hydrologist. So it's not all timber sales specific, as we often hear, that comes straight. So to Neil's point, it's not apples to apples in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But it is... everybody compares it to the volume number. I'm pretty good.
I'm glad you do it.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that we have this kind of numbers, and then, you know, it's possible it can be improved, but at the very least, some notes, right?
Yeah,
then
I can do that.
No, again, it's just beginning to see how the different states are and looking where they're doing things different, is it causing different outcomes.
Right. And so back to Peter's point, what is not on here. So Idaho has their GNA, right? They don't have the analogous federal forest restoration program, so it's hard to even compare that. But their GNA program is its own, what do they call them? For lack of a better term, division. They've created a bureau that's like that. Montana's doing the same thing, right? Washington has not done that, but the control over all of those 14 people work for the central office. Ours is completely decentralized. Like, Mike Billman doesn't work for me, right? And that's the way we do business. And it's working. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. But the organizational structure is very, very different.
So he works. Well, I would disagree. I don't supervise. He doesn't supervise.
So Joe Hessel supervises him?
Or somebody in Joe Hessel's shop.
Okay.
But a division chief or a program manager has complete oversight over what they do. And if they...
Their work plan. And
their work plan, what they're the priorities. Yeah. If that comes to a head, that's who the deputy state forester is all between.
Yeah. And there's tension there. It is different, right? So, like, in Washington, project selection happens by Trevor, right? The guy, Trevor, who is effectively in my old position, Phil's position, makes the decisions on which timber sale projects they're pursuing and which ones they're not. That Mike Billman does that for us. So it is different, and it works for us. I'm not suggesting that it's not anything there. What's different for me is that they've all decided to make it a very specific division. Now, IDL, Washington, they also don't have a state forest division in the same way that we do. They have effectively DSL, our DSL, as part of a natural resource agency, and they manage state lands. So Idaho has recreated their own timber sale program where we're tapping into our state forest because they're here. So we think that's efficient. But there's growing pains to that about getting another division on board to help us and getting up to speed and like, oh, this system works differently and we don't have to do this particular contract provision. But I think we're over a lot of that.
And I think
we're ready to go.
And the real unique thing I think that we haven't taken advantage yet is we're using all of our techniques on federal lands. But I think there's a real opportunity to learn about different ways to do timber sales that may transfer back.
Yeah.
Like not marking every single tree. Or
any of them.
What?
There are
any of them. Yeah.
That's not our practice on instead of
yeah. Yeah, and so
when I brought up, you know,
prescription by designation.
Yeah. We don't do that.
Right.
Well, and we need to start thinking about
that. We do on federal land.
Yeah.
Well, that's well. I and so,
but not on every forest, obviously. Right.
So, right.
But so I mean, state forest still doesn't do that. Is what you're saying?
A lot of women are still gun shy.
Mark everything.
Well, and so there's differences all around. I think there's a real opportunity, which is why I think there's an advantage to having it tied closely to our state.
Yeah.
Because I think we can both learn from each other, mm-hmm. particularly where it really makes a lot of sense. The lower the value of the sale, the less you do in prepping it,
right.
the higher your return.
Yeah. Well, right. even going to leaf tree mark instead of cut tree mark can totally change prescriptions and costs.
Yeah.
Right.
And then when we went to Arizona, the state foresters went there, and we saw stuff where it's, user selection. They're doing this on state lands, and again, it's lower value thing. But they train the operator, and then there's a, it can lead to super complicated prescriptions too, because they want heterogeneity around the landscape. They map it out where on the ground the prescription is. And a GPS register map, right. and the guy goes around and.
And is that the other doing ICO type prescription?
I think they're kind of doing, some virtual marketing stuff down there.
Yeah. Yes.
Fascinating.
Anyway. But we're down in the weeds.
Well, all of us can go down
No, but this was, I mean, to me, in terms of trying to set up the final conversation, this is helpful because it does sort of, highlight that there's. Within the original scope and focus of the subcommittee, or not the original, but as soon as FFRP was passed, that became our focus, right, in GNA. There's a lot going on. So it is good to have a subcommittee that's tracking this.
Yes.
No, I agree.
Right? And then the question is, what do we do with the rest of the stuff we talked about earlier? But let's pause for 1 second, see if Tom has any questions or reflections here.
Well, I do go back to this has really been good and interesting, and it's when you think about it, we're spending a couple of hours on these topics, which is a good thing, and the reason to have a board subcommittee, because it would be very difficult to be doing this, in the content, part of our normal operation at the full board level. But I think the questions are the bigger questions that, aside from the weeds that we've been down into, which have been interesting, but is how does the role, what's the board's relationship to the issues we're talking about? Therefore, what do we need in terms of the subcommittee, and how does that change, given the fact that the issues are different than they were when we? I think we all understand and have discussed why we created this subcommittee, but I kind of think we need to revisit that purpose and kind of have a conversation at the board level about what we need to do here. because I think the board will be really interested in it. And I don't really know what the answer to that is, but it is not. I think when we're thinking about changing the role of the group from a governance perspective, I think we need to really, I think that that's something we ought to do. I mean, I think we have to just recognize how the path has changed since we started out. But I think it's a good conversation to have back with the board and how we, because this is where a lot of the act. I think given the wildfire council and what's happened there and the interest that the governor clearly has in implementation around that, a lot of which relates fairly directly and specifically to the department and the board, this is a, seems like, this is where we have the space to have deeper conversations about it, to help the board sort out where it goes and what it wants to do around these things, if that makes any sense at all. But I think that that's the issue here that I'm sort of thinking about as we go, as we've had the conversations today, because
I agree with you. But what I'm hearing is that we need to be working with the department to find some target meeting in the future where we would actually be on the board agenda, and then build a work plan. Build a work plan to bring a discussion to that board meeting.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would like to transition to that now, in terms of talking about where I see a role, and kind of honor the what was discussed at the last meeting. There was, on the GNA update, there was a concern whether there needed to be policy guidance for GNA since it's become operational, and policy guidance for federal forest restoration since it's become operational. And I would a little bit challenge how operational we are. And we've made great progress, but we're still strategically doing things to be successful.
Right.
Working on CEs that we know we can get done, working on areas where we have strong collaboration. What we haven't moved up is moving up to scale and focusing our investment in a way that has a landscape scale impact. So while we're strategic, we need to shift the focus of the strategy, I think. And I think the way, do you know what I mean?
I'm tracking.
Great. And so I think the question of do we need policy guidance for GNA and FR, in thinking of Chad's diagram, the real question is do we need policy guidance around shared stewardship and how to implement shared stewardship agreement. And the council hasn't done all the work the state's committed to in that shared stewardship agreement. And so three roles that I think are new roles for this committee. One is, while we all agreed to use a quantitative risk assessment, I think everybody agreed that the current one isn't the end-all of end-all. And there needs to be a broadening of the contribution to the QRA. It was primarily fire folks, which are great, but I don't think it had the full suite of values that we would need. So I think a role for the board is, or the council together, and it's something the board, the committee can think about, is what should be the composition of the group that does the update. We'll be involved, but is it just agency people, or should there, you know?
And we're thinking, so there's a technical, there's like a very robust technical element of the remote sensing analysis, right? And then the overlay of this values matrix that tweaks the colors on this thing. The algorithm, right? And well, that's what you're talking about, the weighting of this algorithm.
The values part particularly.
Yeah.
And why would I think that?
Yeah.
And because there's two things. There's the remote sensing. I'm not even, there's probably some values in that. But the main one is,
I would agree, but that's not like where the board would have any. We couldn't really contribute there.
No, but it,
I mean, at least not me.
I think what would be useful for me, because I don't recall. I mean, I think there needs to be, and I've spoken to the Forest Service, and I think they're open to it. Is a broader constituency on the valuing and two things: the valuing and the weighting of values. So what are we valuing? Council identified four areas or five that are not included that need to be.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that would be useful, and it's tied to the second area, are metrics for accountability and a monitoring and a trackability program. And I think those metrics should be focused on outcomes. So I think, you know, that again, it starts saying there needs to be a work group. And I think, and I don't know how this committee feels, but I think that the Federal Forest Working Group, when it was had a very clear charge.
Yeah, right.
And that
was effective. Yeah.
And
it, when it had a clear charge, both a clear charge and its work and contributions were sort of valued by the state. But that doesn't always happen.
Right. And in this case,
in
I think...
In the form of it being convened by a policy officer from the governor's office.
Yeah.
Well, and if we can, and if we can convene it by both a policy officer from the governor and the U.S. Forest Service saying, yeah, we want to convene this group for these purposes, you know, and so I've suggested a couple of purposes, and I don't...
What's the third one? What was your third?
I think QRA, metric for accountability, are we meeting outcomes, and then, maybe that's the same thing, but then designing the monitoring program. You can have metrics to measure outcomes, but then you need... a commitment to developing a science-based and trackable monitoring program to sort of gauge progress and create accountability. So I think the metrics may be a subset under the monitoring program, whether you're a lump or a splitter. But those were at least some of the big rocks that haven't been tackled. You know, there's other ones, but I think... Oh, that's the third one that I think. I still think there's tension in the system in terms of governance around local decision making. And I'm sorry, and I won't.
No, it's fine. No, it's fine. I mean, there's definitely tension, but I also think it's. I think it's mostly just because people haven't sat down to figure it out.
Well, right. And
so
I think we've
in the absence of that, right? There's posturing and trench building,
well, so that's an area where I think a group should sit down and figure this.
Yeah.
And where, at what scale do we do state level prioritization? And what when is the handoff, or when are the local people brought in? Even if you're doing it at the state level, or you know, I think we've been successful in federal forest restoration. Because we work at the local level, and we give technology to the local level. I think that there ought to be a governance process around that.
But there is, I mean, you know, that conversation about your four regional FFRP staff, you know, is at least one story of bridging that.
Trying, yeah.
Right? So yeah. The Northeast Oregon Federal Forest Restoration Program staff person is given some performance objectives, priorities from you guys, right? But it's all working within the local office to determine which projects, the right place, the right time, the right strategy, right?
Yep.
And that's kind of what I've always been thinking, right?
But
we need to have that conversation. Is that what everybody else is thinking?
Well, when we have that, I doubt if we have the monitoring and the control
to
know that the local decisions are feeding back in and accomplishing the state priorities. So I think all those three, in my sense, a quantitative risk assessment, the metrics for accountability and control, and the local state are all one.
Well, you're right. And then the other question there would be, because this actually came up with the Federal Forest Working Group when they were building the dashboard, right? That was, so complicated by this exact thing, is that people didn't want to have to march to a common set of performance, these flagship goals. They wanted to be given free latitude to do whatever made sense in their own place. And eventually we corralled people around, okay, that's fine, but there is actually some commonality across all these projects. So if we get a report on where there's generally some commonality, that's a step forward, right?
And there's a lot of it.
And the reason I say that is, you want to be able to report against the state objectives. At the same time, you want to give some latitude for some local objectives to happen, and then sort of how do you tease out if we focus just on the state objectives and the output could have been X, and instead by incorporating some local objectives, we got 75% of that, but you got a hell of a lot more social license and building the ground, right?
And that's
how do we weigh all that?
Well, so that's where it's really challenging, and that's where I think why I've focused on outcomes in the shared stewardship agreement, because our outcomes are vibrant local communities. Well, I think local communities should have a big say in what they think is vibrant.
Yeah.
And so the question is, coming up with a set of metrics that include, it could be a set that you select from that if you achieve these things. So in one area, they may value recreation a lot more. So I'm thinking Oak Ridge. So their vibrant community, are we encouraging or increasing that segment of our community? But I think that's going to be the real challenge, is how do you have a set of metrics that allows local flexibility but rolls up to outcome.
Yeah, correct.
And moving from an output-based or an input-based metric system to an outcome-based metric system is a challenge.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot of thought, and we're going to get it wrong. And we should be okay with that.
Yeah.
Then if we start tracking it, we can see what's working and not for measuring.
Yeah. And it does get back to, the conversation we've had a lot through the Mitigation Committee and the Wildfire Council about, and prior to that, it sort of didn't originate there, but moving away from what people have called random acts of restoration, right, or conservation to a design that really has an impact, right, that's achieving the change at appropriate scale that you can, whatever you were trying to do, whether it was wildfire with risk reduction or wildlife permeability or watershed function, that it happens, that it's not just this.
And I would love to see some effective metrics and outcomes, but it's a real challenge. We used to judge students by how much input we gave them. We gave them 6 hours of silviculture input. We never measured what they actually learned.
Yeah. but getting back to kind of where we've got whatever 10, 12 minutes left. So you've started the conversation with some people asking the question whether the board should be trying to provide policy guidance for FFRP and GNA since they are now operational. And what we talked a little bit about that, and then you thought we should go beyond that to talk broadly about SSA, because that everything you just talked about would roll down to FFRP and GNA, right?
Yep.
And certainly the things that you've talked about with one, and I don't know if this is policy guidance. I don't know that it is, but I do think that we don't want to lose track of sort of advocating for and potentially helping to frame the communications strategy and plan that's around this whole thing. Because that's come up over and over again, right? That if we don't figure out a way to coordinate the breadth of stakeholders to provide some uniform messaging and break through sort of this competing propaganda that's out there, it's hard to maintain the political will, right, to keep this thing going.
Yeah, and I think the idea of keeping the governor's council around, I think, has provided an opportunity to break those barriers because of the diversity on the council itself.
Yeah, correct.
And then that, so in some way, and so I think that I agree 100%. Having that communication plan around what this is going to be important. But I think part of that is we got to show how it is actually different and how we're, accountable. I mean, some of these ideas, all the ideas around the monitoring and the metrics for outcomes, a tractable monitoring program came from Rural Voices of Conservation Coalition, because they were frustrated that the Forest Service wasn't tracking their progress and were repeatedly missing the mark sometime.
Yeah.
So their accountability part. So
yeah.
I think if we...
But let me ask you a question. Is your recommendation... So, we started this with a question that we might be thinking about two different plans. And one would be if there is a shared stewardship advisory committee, of which hopefully we would have a representation on. This plan makes a lot of sense, what you just said.
Yeah.
Right? But then, is that so what about the subcommittee? Are we trying to feed the board representative with this, sort of being the bridge between our board and the Shared Stewardship Advisory Committee? Or if that exists, are we just letting that happen there through our representative?
I have to say it's TBD.
And so that's what I think, too.
Unfortunately. Okay.
And I'm saying this committee is the right person, right group to weigh in, or the board is the right group to weigh in from your perspective on how it should be.
Agreed with that. I still think, and one thing you said earlier made me think about a little different than what we talked about previously, is you mentioned a subcommittee of a larger council. There's no reason that this or the board couldn't play some role in executing a component of a broader re-envisioned wildfire council or shared stewardship council, right, that the governor has, right? Maybe they hand the board
certain pieces,
a piece, and
right,
like you and I talked about earlier, a large bit of that's going to be fuels reduction, fire risk reduction. What is there a better entity to go figure out how to do that and what than the Board of Forestry? I would say probably not, but so to me it depends on who is in that committee.
Well, the only thing with what you just said, and then I want to let Joe and Tom chime in again because we're bumping up against time. But if that happens, like one thing that just strikes me about that, right? If they, if essentially this mitigation work is kicked to our subcommittee, we've got to allow for non-Board of Forestry members to be on this committee, don't we?
I think so. And so I think it becomes,
if that's the key group underneath the Wildfire Council, if it was just Board of Forestry members, I think there would be a lot of people that were like, BS.
And so I think it's and that's why I think we're not saying we want shared stewardship. This is back to the question of what's in and what's out of shared stewardship. I think we're saying the role of this subcommittee around is really setting up the implementation so the mitigation will be successful. It is focused on mitigation. It is focused on increasing the pace and scale.
Yeah.
It's still core to the mission.
Right. This subcommittee or the...
The subcommittee and the work that I've said is important.
So confused. And it's not because of you all. It's because there's so many irons in the... just to be blunt about it, there's so many irons in the fire right now. We're about to head into a session. And there's clearly some priority from the governor's office around continuing some of this work, but it's the legislature's decision, I guess, to do that, although it's a governor's committee. It's just hard to figure out right now.
Right. And so what I'm saying, one question I would just ask this committee is if I organize a meeting between the Forest Service, Matt Donegan, Jason Miner, and myself, does the board want to be represented there?
I'd be happy to come.
So I think that at least that step, and then maybe based on that conversation, we can begin to further develop the actual role of this committee. And the option is maybe it's a role on the council and help defining what the council is. Is the council also advise shared stewardship, or is there a group that advises both the council and shared stewardship, or however you structure it?
But I
have a lot to. I mean, I'm drinking from the fire hose. To be honest, I mean, this is a lot. This is a lot to take in. I appreciate being a part of this, and I'm just trying to learn about how this all begins to fit together. And so, but I mean, what Peter talked about, the roles of this committee make a lot of sense to me. And you start talking about monitoring and major blockages, but I appreciate it's pretty hard.
Yeah,
I didn't put this stuff in here because I thought it was easy.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. So I guess I apologize. I don't have a lot to offer because I'm just trying to learn about this.
That's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
Tom.
We need to make sense out of all of this. The committee is a creature of the board. That, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So in a way, the question is, what's the board's function in relationship to all of these things we're talking about? And then what do we need to enable the board to do that? And I continue, when I came on the board, we had no committees, no subcommittees, zero. We created this one because we had a lot of issues around what we were trying to do with our relationship to federal forests. And I think this has been a great group to do that. And we created the other committee, which was to focus on state forests and hopefully coming up with a better situation than we had. And in all candor, that didn't work as well, in part because that issue ends up being of so much importance to the entire board that it's hard to do it in a committee or subcommittee. I think there is so much work to be done around and discuss tonight that's the right place, but I guess I just want to put it in that context of it comes back to what's the appropriate Board of Forestry role and the issues that have been described, and that's what really shapes what the committee does. It's not really the other way around. I think that we need to be able to articulate that, have a conversation at a board level before long, and also, you know, make sure that we're on the right track with others and the state apparatus around all of these things. But I think it's really, as I said before, just the fact that, you know, we're having this conversation and that there is as much in front of us, to me, is the argument for modifying but continuing. But I guess it's in that modification that we need to be really transparent about that and have that conversation with the board.
Yeah. Appreciate that. So is this work as a summary, essentially, you know, we've reviewed the Wildfire Council's report and recommendations in general and then specific to the existing or the original scope and purpose of the subcommittee. We kind of focused in on those issues. As well as the FFRP program, the GNEA program, and sort of the broader mandate of the shared stewardship agreement. We recognize, in light of all of this, a need to review the role and function of the Board of Forestry with respect to these issues, and from that, the role of this subcommittee and the scope. We need some further clarification from the governor's office and the Wildfire Council, and we're planning to have this meeting with those parties and the U.S. Forest Service, and bring forward some thoughts about a modification but a continuation of the subcommittee to a future board meeting.
I think that's a great summary.
Okay. And I can reference some of these areas that Peter raised too if we want to throw some ideas out.
Yeah, and I think that at this meeting, the only thing I would characterize as Glenn's position is he's really open to having that conversation, not is all of us sort of sorting out what we think would be best for the state and the Forest Service and how we continued with shared stewardship. So we could come out of that saying, no, there's no shared stewardship coordinating committee.
Right.
Or we could come out, you know, we want to hear from everybody about what are the needs and what do we think. So I think it'll be an open conversation.
Okay.
And it's a known thing that the governor's office is considering an extension of the council, right? Or some version of it. So the only modification action verb around need clarity from the governor's office. I think we could say we're going to coordinate a meeting with the governor's office. I think you could even reference saying there has been discussion about a continuance of the Wildfire Council. And given that potential and our interest in this issue and our role with this expanded, you know, blah, 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 we need to discuss how that all fits together or something of that nature.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been discussions with your stewardship
going
committee as well, hasn't there been?
There was a big conference call where both Jason and I were speaking about that. I raised it and Jason confirmed that that's what they were thinking. I was wandering around a train station someplace in California. I think we're good.
We're good.
Yeah, Tom, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, thanks a lot, Nils. This is everybody else who's participated in this. This is really a really good effort. Appreciate it.
All right. I did have one other thing. Should we be aiming to have our next subcommittee meeting the Tuesday before the March meeting or earlier? Or, I mean, if we do it earlier, we could try to do it virtually. I mean, we could set up a Zoom meeting or something.
When's the March meeting?
March 4th?
Mm-hmm. No. The realistic, the bandwidth. By the time we get the meeting set up in the governor's office, I mean, maybe we could pull it off by March 4th.
That's what I was wondering.
Okay.
Session doesn't actually end until March the 8th, so we may not know.
We may not fully know, and so it might be
a virtual follow-up.
A virtual follow-up once we know, in preparation for preparing stuff for the April meeting.
Oh, not, well, and I think you were misunderstanding me. I wasn't trying to bring something to the March board meeting.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to keep Chad and I some
Through the legislative session.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
February session.
So we'll try to get a subcommittee meeting somewhere in conjunction with the April meeting or earlier if we do it virtually.
That yeah. So sense. Late mid to late March is what I would target.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the meeting in April is late April, right?
Yeah.
Late.
Because we can set up a Zoom conference with you guys, right?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we should do that.
All right. I think I will adjourn the meeting. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.